Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now only 323 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round since 2015. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
What's up?
And Mr. Bradford is here as well.
What's going on? I had to get my emergency beer out of the drawer that I keep in this desk because John took mine.
And I guess...
Holy moly.
Joseph makes three. Hi, everybody. So this week on the show, it is once again Big Game Sunday as we're recording this. And just like with last year's episode where we kind of had to forego the annual Puppy Bowl to record this episode, we're doing that once again this year with the third in the Santa Buddies franchise, Santa Paws 2, The Santa Pups.
Wait, is this what we did last year?
This is exactly what we did last year, almost to the day.
Oh, I think erased it from my memory really well, because if you put a gun to my head, I don't think I could tell you a single thing that happened in the second film.
And believe me, I've put a gun to your head three or four times this week.
That was the search for Santa Paws, and the only thing I can remember about that episode is I exercised Herculean restraint by not mentioning J.O. crystals even once.
I don't think that's true, but okay, sure, whatever.
Maybe I mentioned them two times, but not a lot.
Well, I regret to inform you that J.O. crystals are once again central to the plot of this film.
Maybe even more than in the first one. They're about as central to the film as the first one.
However, this time around, they are not special at all because almost literally everybody has them.
You get a J.O. crystal, and you get a J.O. crystal.
And Mrs. Claus, you too get a J.O. crystal. We don't know what you're going to do with it, but we're sure you're going to find a way.
Oh, gosh. I'm just reliving.
We're sorry, everybody.
So before we get going this week, I have some old business from a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So last week, the movie was basically... To sum it up, it was, we have a dead parent at Christmas, the Christmas spirit is low, and then someone comes in and saves the day with the power of rock music. Not to be all video game chat, but that's literally the plot of the one level in Elite Beat Agents.
not to get too far up our own asses, but that is literally the plot of this film.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And this film actually has a weird video game chat relation as well, kind of, tangentially.
Lay it on me.
I will just have to give a video game chat warning, basically. Okay, so this movie is, as far as I can tell, supposed to be a sequel to either Santa Paws or to Santa Buddies, one of the two.
Are you suggesting that this is a Zelda timeline situation? Because I was going to go there as well.
Yeah, I'm actually suggesting this is a Bowser Jr. Koopalings situation.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. So we'll get to it in a little bit more in the plot summary, but they basically retcon away one of the primary characters from the first two films, if I'm not mistaken, which is Puppy Paws. But everybody else is there.
I kind of had a question about this, and I want to say that this is a prequel to Santa Paws.
But Puppy Paws never mentions that he has... I guess they just don't mention
That would suggest something terrible happens to his siblings now, doesn't it?
But
the only way you can make it make sense is that if Puppy Paws is the original one, and that Puppy Paws goes up to be the Santa in this one.
Okay. And that means Christopher Lloyd, who plays the dog catcher, is dead, and that the new dog catcher is Christopher Lloyd's son?
See, we might as well just get straight into the plot, because that brings up questions that I was going to ask.
There are so many questions. Can somebody give me a quick recap of what happened?
This must be a prequel, though, because in this one, the girl only has one dead parent. But in Puppy Paws, she has two dead parents.
It's not the same girl, though, right?
It's the same fucking actress.
It is the same little girl, yes.
Is it really?
Yes. These movies have basically a stable of, like, C-grade actors and actresses they just repeat.
I got that part. I was imagining more, to bring back video game chat, a Final Fantasy sort of thing, where it's like, there's always these archetypes. There's always a character named Sid, and he's an engineer, but he's going to look different, and you're going to meet him in a different part in the movie slash game. But I don't know, man.
The puppy stereotypes were so weak in this movie.
It was really bad, guys. All right. Probably...
I guess let's just dive right into it, because I feel like explaining it will bring up the questions that we all clearly have about this movie. All
right. First, before we finish our intro, before we get to the plot summary, I just want to mention that I initially tried watching this on the train on my commute.
Oh, no.
And people looked at me like I was someone to fear.
Like, maybe you should invest in a pair of headphones.
That would be the best, is watching that without headphones on a train. I don't think I'm a brave enough man to do that. So
maybe it's the problem that you live in an area where people are still, like, social to each other on trains for some god-awful reason.
No, because, like, we're not.
Why are people looking at you on the train then? Like, if you did that in New York, people would just be like, well, he's not shitting everywhere, so it's an improvement.
Well, all I know is that I don't get sat next to when I'm doing this sort of thing.
This is a public service. We're giving directly to you, Brad.
Nobody talks to each other on the train, and if somebody tries to talk to you on the train, it's the worst. I hate it when people talk to each other on the train. Just get to your job, get back from your job. Nobody wants this.
They're either asking you for money or they're a tourist, right?
Yeah, either that or it's like young, fresh-eyed, uncynical interns who are like talking to each other about their jobs. And
look at,
like,
my lanyard.
Don't we have enough jobs when we're at our jobs? Can't we just not talk about our jobs and forget about our jobs for the 50 minutes of solitude that I have every single day?
I think you moved to the wrong town, buddy.
It sounds like it, yeah.
I need to move to the middle of Montana. No, I've always said it's like...
You need to move to Pineville, Brad.
I need to move to Pineville, USA.
First question.
Everybody's friendly to everybody, yes.
My first question. This is not Fernfield, is it?
Yeah, it's Pineville.
This is the first... Okay, this is technically the 13th in the Air Bud franchise. The first time we've ever... A film was taking place anywhere other than Fernfield.
It's Pineville. It's two syllables, and it also has a plant.
I hate that I care about this now.
So, since you brought it up, here's something very strange with this series, just in general as a series.
Sure.
It's basically the product of two brothers. Like, you'd expect a series like this to just be like, oh, Disney farms it out to whoever's the cheapest director they can get at the time. No, yeah. It's all Robert Vince and, I forget his brother's name, but his brother died. His brother directed the movies before that.
Bobby Vaughn.
William Vince.
Okay.
Robert Vince directed Air Bud 4, and then every Air Buddies film since then, like since 2006, this has been a Robert Vince like production, basically.
Who did the first one?
Air Bud was directed by Charles Martin Smith.
Yeah, and the two Vince brothers were the producers on Air Bud.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man.
So this is totally like the brainchild of two horrible, horrible brothers.
But one of them passed, and the other one's like, brother, I will carry on your mantle forever. The name of Bud will echo through these halls for eternity. No, rips. Condolences. Anyways, so this is the Air Bud series. This is the third in the Christmas Buddies part of the series.
Yes. And here's
the third one we've done.
This is the third one we've done. There is another, but there's a wrinkle in that supposition.
Yeah, this timeline is very convoluted because Puppy Star Christmas seems to be both Santa Buddies 4 and also Pup Star 4 at the same time.
Yeah. Puppy Star Christmas is the convergence of the Air Buddies and the Pup Star franchise. Once again, all directed by Robert Vince.
Do you need to educate me on Pup Star? Where does that fit into the Beverly Hills Chihuahua timeline?
I'm fairly positive it does not, and we will thank the Lord for small favors.
All right.
I mean, to be honest, this is completely running parallel to the Winslowverse, so I don't give a damn.
Fair
absolutely
enough.
People always talk about how the Marvel Cinematic Universe is the way it has been going on longer than any, but you know what? The Air Bud Cinematic Universe has been going on since 1997, and it's still going strong. So, game, set, match, Air Bud wins.
So this came out in 2012. Kevin Feige.
Robert Vince has a sock full of quarters just for you. Man.
So this came out in 2012. This is a film.
Yes, this came out the same year as The Avengers, speaking of
which. All right. And the first thing you should know about this film is that, for some reason, even though none of the others were, it's musical.
Well, I mean, the others had songs in them, but this is the first time that it really is just straight up a musical.
I mean, the first one had, like, a number where Tiny sang about how she/he is excited about wants somebody to love them for Christmas.
Right, right.
But in this one, we are treated, as soon as the puppies are about to be delivered, we're treated to a lyrical song about how the puppies are coming. It's like, they're coming, the puppies are coming. And this is about the level of the level of lyrics that I'm doing right now, making fun of it, that's kind of accurate. It's about that.
Yeah, the songs are about the caliber of Reptar on Ice, all of them.
Yeah, pretty yeah, much. Basically. It is people singing what they are doing, or singing very generally about the holidays, and it's wonderfully bad. And this is a Disney product, and I can't help but wonder if this is like where they send the interns who are like intro to writing musicals for Disney 101. It's like this is their term project,
right? This is like back in the day, Disney animators would be like farmed off to like the gulags of the B team film when they weren't allowed to work on
ready
the A
for
projects
prime time.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I kind of feel like this might be that.
Speaking of which, doesn't this movie feel like it should have been animated, though it would have been a very, very bad animated movie? Like, it would have been, like, not even DreamWorks, like the fourth or fifth string studio?
The kind that show up only in Netflix or Redbox, kind of?
The kind that are approved by the Dove Foundation, yes.
The kind that make, like, the Nut Job or whatever that movie was? Like, that's kind of the level we're working with here.
Yeah. Also, I guess so.
Can I just go ahead and open up a gate to hell real quick?
Yeah, do it.
This
is already pretty much there.
This is connected to the Winslowverse.
Oh, how so? Do tell.
Because Air Bud is also Comet from Full House. And Urkel appeared on an episode of Full House. I'm in hell.
I'm
in hell and there's Satan. Hi, Satan.
So what you're saying is this is the 17th sequel to Die Hard.
Yes.
Let's jump into this plot. So essentially the film starts out, the Santa pups are being born, and it's like the beginning of friggin' 101 Dalmatians.
Mm-hmm.
Except
they're not about to die.
Exactly. There is no threat at any point in this film that the Santa pups are going to be killed and skinned and turned into a coat.
Or dying, right before being born. Because wasn't there that one scene?
Yeah,
where he has to rub the puppy really hard?
Yeah, there was, but that's not funny, Brad.
All right. They were going to skin those puppies, though, weren't they?
You don't want to watch a guy rub a puppy out. That's just wrong.
Especially, like, off-brand Santa Claus. No way. No thanks. So there's...
Are you
there's...
Dill Hole? I almost spat my beer out.
I'm really not comfortable with the Santa in these movies, by the way. It's just... I don't know. It's just off.
The Santa in this movie is weird, too, because, like, I'm used to... This is like such a... I don't want to say anything bad about the guy because, the actor playing Santa, Pat Finn, he's in a lot of sitcoms. But like in the previous film, it was Richard Rale, who is a fairly well-known actor. And before that, it was George Wendt, who is like all-time classic sitcom star. But at this point, it's just some weird dad in a beard. And I don't know.
It's very Tim and Eric. And now that you mention that this guy's on a bunch of sitcoms, I have to wonder if I've seen this guy before on others. Because he looks like somebody from The Good Place. Oh my goodness.
He might be. He's been the dad in like so many recent sitcoms.
Yeah, but it's just like his beard's a little too short and he's just a little too thin.
He looks just a little too young to be Santa, which makes me think this is a prequel to the other two films.
Look at this man's headshot on IMDb and tell me, what a strange choice for somebody to play Santa Claus.
He looks like a Home Depot ad.
Yeah.
Became a person.
Weird.
But whatever. Right. I don't want to make fun of Santa Claus because Santa is like really not the problem with this film.
Santa also only appears for like 5 minutes in this film. Yeah,
no offense to this guy, but his headshot looks like it's just trying to say, like, if you need Patrick Warburton but only have $50, call me.
That's the best anybody can say. That you hit the nail on the head there.
Okay.
All right. So there are puppies being born. There are four of them.
We got four pups here. We've got Jingle. Okay, there's three girl pups and one boy pup. We got Jingle, who her whole thing is that she tries to sing Christmas carols and she can't do it because she has a terrible voice. But that does not stop her.
Singing badly is not a personality, Carol.
The fastest way to spread Christmas cheer is to sing badly for all to hear. We've got Charity, who is supposed to be the paragon of virtue and giving, but she kind of isn't because she's super greedy. And that's
I did not see that coming. It's the exact opposite of what you would expect.
Oh, wow.
She talks in Instagram speak.
Oh, yeah, she does.
It was the same with Rose. She's basically Rosebud.
She is a classic uninformed millennial.
Yes.
Then there's Hope, who is, for whatever reason, a daredevil, who thrill-seeker dog, who likes to...
She likes to say the word extreme and also the word radical.
Yes. Yeah, it's real extreme, dude.
And then there's Boy Dog, whose personality trait is that he's the boy dog. But yeah, also,
and you know he's the boy dog because he's got the one spot over his eye, and his name is Noble. And I just assumed, in writing all my notes, I assumed it was Puppy Paws. So I just kept writing that he's Puppy Paws.
No. He's essentially Puppy. He is Puppy Paws.
But I want
like Puppy Paws archetype.
I want to harp on this though. His character trait is boy dog, kind of like how in DuckTales, like what's her name is just Girl Duck. That's her entire character.
Yeah.
Except because he is boy dog, he also is like the leader because that's how movies work.
Right.
Because misogyny.
Yes.
But at the same time, it goes even deeper because, like, I feel like at some point somebody said, well, we can't have three girl dogs and one boy dog. So they made Hope a tomboy. So now we kind of have two girl dogs and two boy dogs, which is kind of unfortunate. Thanks a lot, Disney. We couldn't have four female Santa pups, could we? But then we discover...
No. Before we discover anything, I want to talk about the best lyric in this entire film, and that is... they're singing about how the pups have arrived, and they're going to bless our hearts four ways. And is the only thing I can think about when I hear these lyrics is chili. Chili four ways. Have you guys had chili four ways, or even five ways?
I cannot say that I have.
Look it up. Next time you come, I'll take you a hard time. So
since we're on a podcast, you could explain it to me and all of our listeners.
So chili four ways or chili five ways is Cincinnati style chili, folks. Yeah. It has a long and storied history, but it's basically a pasta sauce. It's not really a chili. So chili four ways, you got your pasta, which is just the cheapest spaghetti that you can buy. Like if you find spaghetti at Big Lots, that's the kind of spaghetti that you're going to use in chili four ways. Then you have your chili, which some people argue is not chili, but it is. Cincinnati chili is amazing. Then you have diced onions, and then you have cheese, and that's chili four ways. You can have chili three ways without, and then there's also chili five ways. You add beans. You can do chili four ways without the onions. You can do chili four ways without the beans. My personal favorite is chili four ways. Hold the onions. It's delightful.
And that does just sound amazing.
Just as a PSA, if you really are kind of a what's the word I'm looking for? Psychopath. You can just go to the store and buy frozen Skyline brand chili spaghetti. It exists. I've seen it.
Yes, you could. If you are some sort of serial killer, you could definitely do that.
To just fall out in the sink and eat while you're standing in front of the TV watching the big game. Yeah, that sounds like my kind of Sunday night.
Don't even bother to microwave it. Just wait for it to thaw out in the sink and get a little nasty.
Get a little bit of that ice crunch in there. It'll do you just right.
Just like cold reality.
That's right.
That's why we can't have nice things, David. That's why Mom left us. Oh, all right.
I assume we're talking about David Berkowitz because clearly this is a serial killer doing this.
All right. So what I was about to say that we discover is that our two buddies are back, Eli and Eddie.
Oh, Eddie's the best. I'm so glad that Eddie is the oasis in this movie.
Excuse me, but it's clearly Eli.
They're a classic comedic duo. One, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, I mean, they're the modern day Stan and Ollie, really.
Essentially. Santa Pups are little shits, and they're trying to teach them.
Yeah, Eli and Eddie teach the Santa Pups in a school classroom all about the importance of the J.O. crystals and their power to bring Christmas magic to the people of the world. And I want to say there's a song that goes here, but I honestly don't recall, because there's definitely a song at the end that plays over the credits that I feel like was supposed to go here.
Yeah, it's only the end credits. I think it's a cut scene from the actual movie that they were just like, screw it, throw it in the end credits.
Right, because I guess they decided it was one song too many.
Well, also the pups are a bit reformed at this point.
That's true.
In the movie. And they're, like, actually receptive to the learning, whereas before in the school scene, they're like, well, I don't care about this. When do we get our J.O. crystals? There's a crankometer in the
school. The crankometer is here, yes!
Yeah,
yes.
There's a crossed candy cane. There's an XLI plot with crossed candy canes in the school scene. I wish this movie had come out later than 2012, because then we could claim that we originated crossed candy canes for an XLI axis. But unfortunately... We can't.
Unfortunately, fair use, fair use, fair use.
Yeah.
Fair use. I said it three times. It's ironclad.
It's true, absolutely.
I sent myself a picture of it in the mail, and now I have the copyright.
But then Eli and Eddie take them into sort of Santa's control room, where we see the big spirit board.
Okay, can I talk about the spirit board? Thank you, video game chat. The spirit board. There's a map. So it's the spirit map. And may I note, and this is complete bullshit, and this actually pissed me off a little bit, there is no Christmas spirit in the Southern Hemisphere. You have so there are clustered symbols on the map to indicate Christmas spirit, and guess what? There are none in the Southern, like, I don't know if the CGI folks just didn't think to place any there, or they're trying to make some sort of statement, but that's bullshit.
Can we assume
it's not like they celebrate Christmas in the South, where they're Catholic.
No, I mean, as we all know, in the Southern Hemisphere, it's summer right now, so their Christmas comes in June. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, they have Christmas in June, and they wear shoes on their hands.
Don't work like that. I've seen the picture on Wikipedia of Santa standing on a beach sweating his ass off in Australia. I know it doesn't work like that. Plus, if the first Santa buddies taught me anything, they get a boomerang for Christmas. And it actually happens on Christmas.
I want a boomerang for Christmas.
Let me write this down.
However, if we're operating under the assumption that this is a prequel, then they haven't discovered Christmas yet, or they haven't gotten... We haven't standardized Christmas yet in the world of this series.
Or in the nomenclature of this specific film, it has not gone viral and spread to the Southern Hemisphere yet.
This is entirely possible, yes.
So we have our answer. No, they don't know it's Christmas. Mystery solved.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. There's a really great scene of Eli holding the J.O. crystal and it, like, glowing.
Yeah, he takes the pups out to see the great Christmas J.O. crystal and show them how it works and all that. And...
Okay, yeah, this great Christmas King Bowser is just way too much trouble for what it's worth. Every movie it nearly dies, and I at this point I would just sell it, you know?
It really is, it's always... On tenterhooks, it's always about to fail, so they really need to come up with an alternate supply, or at least put some wooden structures underneath it so it doesn't fall down. There's a really oddly framed scene, though, of Eli holding the J.O. crystal, where he's, like, basically, like, huffing it, and then just put sparkles all around it. It's it's really great, and I want a gif of it. There are two things that I want a gif of.
And he's, like, standing over the precipice of a giant chasm. Holding the J.O. crystal like Frodo in Lord of the Rings, like a Mountain Dew.
It is a sight to behold.
It's wild.
So can you please make a GIF? And there's one other GIF request that I have of one of the most terrifying things that I've seen committed to film.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So once we get that out of the way, we kind of are introduced to the main plot of the film, where Mrs. Claus is taking a trip down to Pineville, because they're at the North Pole, to figure out why Christmas spirit is kind of on the wane. And because she says, unfortunately, you know, we just lost one of our best ambassadors in Pineville, so she's going to investigate.
I like to think that we are ambassadors to the Santa Claus.
Excuse me, it's the Santa Claus.
The Santa Claus.
There is no E in Claus, and there is no L in cause.
Yup, that one. Santa Claus. Because we embody the Christmas spirit 365 days of the year, no matter what anybody else will tell you.
No, I'm topping out at maybe 35 days at most. I mean, I don't know about you, but I turn the fuck off when we're not doing this podcast.
It us. All right, that's fine.
Fine. And as soon as he said that they lost an ambassador in Pineville, I had forgotten about Fernfield, and my first thought was, wait a minute, did Air Bud die?
It's a your name situation. I think this is the answer to your question. The entire town of Fernfield was wiped off of the map after a meteor hit it, and Pineville is the new reincarnation of it in a your name-esque situation.
Oh my god.
That's what's happened in the Budverse, and that's why Air Bud died.
So there's an entire like Cloverfield style film that we're not seeing that takes place immediately prior to this in the Air Bud universe.
Yep, and also some other puppy is switching bodies with Air Bud in a Freaky Friday sort of situation. but here's the spoiler alert.
Where they both bite onto the
same. Air Bud's dead. Airbud's a ghost.
Airbud's a ghost, yes. But he imbues his spirit into like a magical dog bone, and the two pups like bite it at the same time, and they say, "I want to know what it's like to be you for just one day."
All right. Seriously, somebody's mom died because she was the ambassador. So there's Charlie from Scandal who kneecaps people in this ABC drama, but he's a caring dad who runs a radio station and is also a lawyer. And his wife died recently, and he's been very depressed. And then there's a depressed kid whose name is Caleb, and he's a little shit, and he's the main character.
Excuse me, his name is Carter, but he's still a little shit.
Well, he basically could be named Caleb, but you know it. I mean, Carter, Caleb, it all blends together after a while. True.
The family radio station, XMAS Radio 87.9, which is a strange call sign for a radio station.
Call signs do not work that way.
It's either a W or a K, and since they're west of the Mississippi, it's got to be a K, so KMAS doesn't really work.
Kiss my Italian... No, wait.
Kiss my ass radio, 87.9.
Kiss my ass radio.
Bringing all the hits from down under, and the down under is the butt.
All right, so much like we're filling time in this episode, they fill so much of this movie with musical numbers.
The radio station has played Baby Got Back 17 times today.
Okay, you could definitely make a radio station that fills 24 hours of airtime with just songs about butts and not repeat a song, right?
You probably could.
Gotta be. All right.
Especially in the Seattle area, like Sir Mix-a-Lot takes up a lot of that radio time, too. Baby Got Back is not the only song he's written about butts.
Yes. All right, let's get back.
All right, so
Baby Got Back on track. Next comes
my favorite part of the film, where the mayor is just walking through the streets of downtown, kind of inspiring people to just start up a random Christmas parade / musical number, where he's singing about how he wants to celebrate Christmas with everyone everywhere all the time. And it's kind of amazing. And I wish that more of the film had been like this random ass, like musical out of nowhere kind of feel to it, you know? But yeah, so the mayor
just like has the power to create and commandeer parades at will.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just coming out of like a savings and loan because of It's a Wonderful Life, I guess.
Because Christmas. This takes place at an indeterminate point before Christmas, because I'm pretty sure it's not Christmas Eve.
Nope.
It's just mid-December, basically.
So this kid's mom is dead. It's a dead mom's Christmas. So
is there absolutely anything in this movie that you can think of that would necessitate it taking place in any time past the 1950s?
There probably wouldn't be a black mare.
Well, yeah, there we go.
That's the one.
That's pretty much it. But like technology wise, this could have taken place in the '50s, and with how Mayberry the town is, it should have taken place in the '50s. And then we have the Andrews sisters basically show up.
Yeah, and everybody listens to the radio? Yeah.
And considering it's already a prequel, why didn't they do this?
It would have been much better if it was a period. It would have been, no, it wouldn't have been better, but it would have been more interesting if it was a period
exactly.
piece.
It would have been more interesting to us because we're trying to latch onto literally anything that will sustain us for
here's,
the next
here's
35
the problem,
minutes.
Though. So we're supposed to consider that Santa Claus is hundreds upon hundreds of years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But if this is a prequel that takes place in the 50s, and then we have like a early 2000s and late 2000s with all the different Santa dogs, Santa like is ageless, but Santa Paws still has normal dog age and still dies every 10 or 15 years?
That's actually, it goes even faster. Santa is mostly ageless, but the Santa pups and the Santa dogs age at, it's not even dog years, they age 7 times 7 years. So in a single year, they basically age 49 years. The average life expectancy of a Santa pup or a Santa dog
the
is
turnover
2 years.
Rate is tremendous.
they're oh, like houseflies.
The Santa dogs have Jack disease.
So you're saying that the puppies that we meet in this film are actually like 45 years old?
No, we're saying that they're dead.
No,
all the dogs are dead.
They're all ghosts. All right, I gotta kick this plot summary
this
into high gear.
Movie has killed more dogs than Adventures of Milo and Otis.
All right. Time me. So the Santa pups are upset that they are not getting their J.O. crystals on time. They want them sooner, so they're going to prove themselves. They steal Eddie's J.O. crystal, hop into the sled with Mrs. Claus as she goes to find the new ambassador. They get into Pineville, and they start granting Christmas wishes, but like a baby cobra, which we've mentioned before, that can't handle their venom, they don't know how to grant the wishes and how to undo them, or what wishes to grant. This is the one thing that I need to put a pin in. They grant a wish for a girl to grow her two front teeth back, and they do, and they show it on screen, and it is the worst thing that you can imagine, because
it is horrifying.
It's super gross.
This scene
looking.
Gets directed by Cronenberg.
It's terrible. All right, they keep going. They find the depressed kid, Caleb Carter. Carter wishes that Christmas didn't exist, or that all this Christmas spirit would go away. Boy dog, being the idiot that he is, grants that wish, and it starts spreading like the flu. It's terrible. Meanwhile, Mrs. Claus calls herself Mrs. Kane, and she finds the family of the dead mom, who includes Carter, the girl that I forget her name of, and the radio station guy.
Sarah.
He put an ad in the paper for her to be a nanny. She pretends to be a nanny for a while, but then she gets arrested because she's harboring animals in a shed, which is all of the reindeer that are in the shed, and everybody
Dasher
is a huge curmudgeon. Yep, they're everybody's being a huge curmudgeon because this lack of Christmas spirit is spreading like the flu. There's a musical number about Christmas colds, and you gotta hug people, and I don't understand it.
There's a Christmas number
right?
in the jail cell with Mrs. Claus and the Bright Sisters.
Yes, there's a Christmas number with the Bright Sisters,
who are singing a Christmas song about how they got arrested for stealing a box of Christmas cookies for sick kids in the hospital.
That was the bright part of the movie. Like, that was amazing. That entire song actually like had me legit enjoying it.
Yes, it was a good song, and it's not a high bar to jump over, but it's the best song in the movie, the best musical number in the movie.
Listen, the quality bar for this film, we could two-step right over it. It is that low.
And you know what? It's actually, again, it's the best musical number in a movie where somebody in the Claus family gets arrested and does a musical number in a jail.
Yes.
Think about it. There are a lot of parallels between this and the previous movie, except the previous movie was a lot better.
I mean, we almost literally could have watched last week's movie again, and it would have been no different. It almost could have been the same thing.
Speaking of being in jail, the dog catcher also caught the Christmas cold, and he captured the puppies and pawned off their collar, I guess, and a bunch of families, all the families in Pineville, are dropping off their dogs at the pound because they don't want their dogs anymore.
Yeah, so the Christmas cold apparently makes you allergic to your own pets, I guess.
It's a very odd choice, and he's like, well, more family dropped off their dogs, guess it's too much hassle for them, can't blame them. It's very odd. So there's a pound full
like
of dogs.
He's collecting all of the dog collars, but not just like the collars, but like very fancy ones, like pearl bracelets and jewelry. And it's like the dog catcher is is collecting all this to sell it later. Almost like he's turning into Christopher Lloyd right in front of our eyes.
Also,
just a quick interjection. What do Disney writers think that the pound does? Because all these people are basically being like, here, go ahead and kill this dog for me in a couple weeks.
Can you murder... Hey, big fave, can you murder this dog for me?
I mean, in movies and TV shows, the pound is almost literally prison for animals, which isn't entirely that far off. But I mean, animal shelters largely are a place for animals that otherwise have no homes for people to come and either to rescue.
Rehome, them. Yeah.
Yeah, to rescue at a later date or whatnot. But it's always portrayed as being prison for dogs. Like, I'm surprised they didn't, like, get little, you know, black and white striped suits for these animals to wear as they're walking them into jail.
Little jumpsuits.
Little jumpsuits with, like, the black hat, the white hats and everything in the little kennels that they have to put them in. It's crazy. It's insane.
So, everybody in the North Pole, the Christmas spirit is dropping because it's the Christmas cold is spreading to other towns, I guess. And
yeah.
Eddie and Eli figure out what's going on, and it's those pups again. So they take their famous transmogrifying truck, and they go to Pineville, I guess. And they're in an ice cream truck, and they're wearing ice cream suits.
Real good. I do actually love that, because they think to themselves, what's something nice and inconspicuous? Oh, ice cream truck. It'll blend right in. It's already cold out. And it doesn't get called on. Nobody calls them on. Nobody's like, what's this ice cream truck doing in the winter? Except for the Mopey Kid. Everyone else is just like, oh, it's the ice cream man.
Yeah, it's ice cream. All
right.
Yeah,
the Mopey Kid sees right through it. He's like, what? Ice cream in the middle of winter? Who are these guys? Amateurs? Yeah, and they certainly are.
And so Eli and Eddie break out Mrs. Claus from the prison, and it's one of the other small bright spots in an otherwise very dire film. Because
Eli starts talking, to fashion himself as a cowboy in a western.
And it's very good. He basically is like, well, we don't have magic J.O. juice, so we're just gonna ram all of this shit, and it's very good. He's like, I think there's one line where he's like, who needs crystals? Or like, who needs Christmas magic? And he just rams through the barn.
Yeah, he's like, I don't have J.O. magic, but I do have a big fucking car, so.
it's a good bit. It's like the one good bit in this entire
He lost his big crystal magic, but fortunately, he found his big dick energy and just smashed right through the door.
Pretty much.
Eli says, like, right before they pull the prison bars off the wall to save Mrs. Claus, he says, like, I saw this in a Western once where the hero talked kind of like this. And he, like, does a John Wayne impression. I don't know what John Wayne Western that is, but I'm sure it's, like, six of them.
Yeah. All right. So, basically, at that point, everybody, all of the protagonists regroup. And the little girl sings on the radio, and all the Gianna sisters go and turn on all the radios in the town and, like, break and enter into, like, 20 different places, which is interesting.
And at this point,
turn on radios.
I want to pause here for a second just to say that at this point in the film, the dad has said he can't do the radio show because he's got to go back to work, because dad is a lawyer and he has to go back to work because, quote, people are suing each other like crazy. During this montage where the sisters are going around turning on radios, there's a radio sitting right behind the judge, and she sneaks behind him, completely unseen by everyone else, and turns the radio on.
I guess the bailiff had to call out sick because of Christmas cold.
Or she paid the bailiff off. I don't know how she did that.
Yeah.
Like, good thing she's not a fucking, like, hitman.
She could have just snapped that judge's neck. Oh my god.
I'm just imagining the fucking one of the Hitman games where you sneak into a courthouse like that, and it's just like, dear lord.
So we should also mention that the puppies get broken out by the pound's owner's dog, and they go and steal the collar back. And there's a misunderstood bulldog who is at the pawn shop. And great, okay, cool. Seen it before. Thank you. I seen it.
So the dogs. Get the crystal back. They find the kid who made the bad wish, and the kid wishes for Pineville and the whole world to have a Merry Christmas forever. And then Puppy Paws or Noble, whoever, says, "I grant that wish," and the day is saved.
Yep.
Which you would think with that wish that the great Christmas crystal would never be in jeopardy ever again, right?
But you'd be wrong, because there's another one of these films, and I'm sure that crystal is going to be in jeopardy again.
It makes me kind of wish for a fifth entry in the series where the Christmas crystal is at the mercy of global warming, and the Santa pups have to make things cool again. I don't know how that
works. I'm not giving you a single bit of that. I don't want there to be a fifth of this film. I mean, I do, because it's terrible. I feel like this one, the first one was bad, so bad it's good, but this one was just kind of...
I'd say, I mean, give it about 3 or 4 years, and they'll have one of the puppies that's just named Fortnite. That's how with the times they are.
There's going to be a gamer puppy. That's there the has dog to be, right?
Because it's all CGI now, so that dog is the one that's going to do all these wacky dances after every 10 friggin' minutes.
I think we talked about this before. Is there an esports Air Bud yet?
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
It's going to be. There's going to be. Mark my words. Before the Air Bud franchise is through, there is going to be an esports Air Bud.
Air Bud 17. He called my mom a bitch like it's a bad thing.
And mark my words, we will find some connection to watch it on this show, even if it's just a bonus episode, because I need that in my life. If only, not because of anything else, but for how bad, like, the fake games that they're going to make for the movie are going to be.
Oh yeah, they're gonna be absolutely terrible, like sub iPhone games. But the kids that are playing it on their with their controllers are gonna be like super into it, like it's literally Fortnite. It's gonna be great.
It's gonna have you know those YouTube videos they make for kids with like stock CGI models of chickens and like Batman and stuff.
Oh, like those it's gonna look YouTube, like that whole like culture of like weird YouTube videos for kids.
Yes, yeah, it's going to be like, that. The graphics will look like that, and then when it cuts over to the kid, they're going to be holding a GameCube controller, and then it's going to be making Pac-Man sounds. And yeah. I am so there for that.
2024, I can't wait.
And despite every like competitive game basically being like deathmatch with objectives, they're going to somehow all be playing like single-player Mario against each other.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Because nobody can hurt anybody. All right. So that's
the plot of Santa Pups 2. And it raises a few questions that I want to bring up to you guys. First and foremost, this one to me feels like it's leaning way too hard into sort of the Hallmark movie territory. Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder if it's just the beginning of that era of like Hallmark movie filmmaking.
Where, it was 2012, and I feel like they were... Because here's the main question. I don't know if you guys have watched Hallmark movies since Hallmark movies have become kind of a thing. I struggle to say a meme, but like everybody knows about how ridiculous it is that Hallmark movies are a thing, and they're, you know, there are like 40 of them every year.
Right, and they've
reached self-awareness now, right? Yeah, like they get how crazy that is, right? And they're leaning into it. And more credit to them, more power to them. But is this part of that? Is the question that you're trying to ask?
Yeah, it's
right?
Really the question. Yeah. Like, so, is this sort of trying to crib the Hallmark style, basically?
So you've opened up a can of worms that I want to address real quick with the Hallmark movies and how there are 40 of them per year. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, in general, a lot of stuff, especially stuff that's made to be baited to, basically, for lack of a better word, is very, very specifically, like, whatever your specific exact fucking kink is, someone made a thing for it. And I'm talking about not just straight-up pornography, but have you gone to the book section of, let's say, a Walmart and looked at the Harlequin books lately?
I have not... I've listened to some people describe them, some other wonderful, illustrious, untouchable podcast hosts describe the contents of recent Harlequin novels. Very specific.
I'm just talking about like it's like a XY chart of like, okay, here are the cowboy books, here are the Christmas books, here's the cowboy Christmas book, here's the chic book, here's the cowboy chic book somehow, the cowboy oil baron book. Like, no matter who you want to get ravaged by, Harlequin has you covered.
I mean, is pornography any different?
No, not at all. I was about to say.
So it's placed, like, so like the Walmart like rack of Harlequin books is just like a series of interlocking Venn diagrams that keep overlapping until you reach the end, basically.
Yeah, it's like the Harlequin books are basically mini vids, but with slightly less piss.
Man, I want to make some sort of tabletop card collecting game where you have to, like, you collect Harlequin novels and you have to arrange them in a specific order where they all have something tangentially related to each other in that exact same fashion. And it sounds like a delight.
That sounds get like ready. An amazing board game or card game, and I would play it every day of my life.
We need to get ready
this immediately.
Playtesting begins very soon.
All right. You see that with the Hallmark movies too, where it's all basically the same plot, just with a couple of pretty much like character traits interchanged to be like, okay, this is for the movie for people to get off to cowboys. This is the movie for people to get off to firefighters.
Yep. It's what is it? It's like you have a lady who is busy with her job and is a go-getter, and she has to move back to her hometown. And there's two guys, and there's the laid back Luke's Diner type guy who's either a cowboy or a fighter who knows about the true meaning of Christmas. And then you have the asshole 80s business guy who is the original love interest, or a male supermodel who is also there for some reason. And everybody figures out the true meaning of Christmas at the end. And
okay, Brett, were you trying to describe the Christmas Inheritance, which you didn't watch, or was that just an accident?
What's Christmas Inheritance?
That's a movie we watched like 2 years ago, Brad.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's, I guess that's a prototypical Hallmark movie, yeah?
It was Netflix made, but yes.
But then this film, I mean, there's a younger sister and an older brother who have a dead parent, and the older brother is a little more affected by the dead parent than the little sister is. And then they run across a member of the Claus family who gets arrested for some reason, and they have to break him out with the help of Santa's elves. And then at some point, Christmas spirit is at an all-time low and has to be rescued. This is almost literally the plot of the Christmas Chronicles, like to a T almost.
Yes, it really is. The broad strokes especially, except there
like, even down to there being a musical number in the jail cell.
This like, is not specific, as good as
the specific points.
Chronicles.
It also came out
6 years later.
Absolutely not. Because
6 years earlier.
Because the Christmas Chronicles had like real name talent to it. And, you know, the most famous person in this movie, I think, was Cheryl Ladd, who was in Charlie's Angels. Other than that, like, yeah, this really is,
here's
is,
the thing,
is living, living and dying off the Air Bud name.
Yeah, only. Like one of the reindeer was voiced by Diedrich Bader. But other than that, I'm looking at a list of names I recognize, and other than recognizing them from other movies in this series, not really.
So here's the thing, listeners. We did not plan this. We did not know that these two movies are essentially the same movie, just one better than the other.
Yeah, it's
full disclosure. This is a complete complete coincidence. Also, yes. Slight aside, am I the only one that when I saw the three sisters in the jail cell when they were first got in there, since everybody's like got the Christmas cold and misbehaving and suing each other, I thought they were in there for being like streetwalkers.
Oh my god.
Oh god, no. I think
I'm the only person who thought that.
Yes, that was not all on you. I figured you're talking about they were getting in there and just like pretty beat the shit out of Mrs. Claus. Like I thought that was where you were going with. Dear Lord.
No. Like they're like wearing less than they were before. Like they're in like they're not skimpy outfits, but they're in like looser fitting clothes. And I was like, wait, what?
They're in movie costumes for dancing and singing. That's basically.
They throw her in jail. Clank. Then the sisters are just like, hey, new fish.
Yeah, I know. It's bad.
So it becomes a women in prison film just for a couple of minutes. Well, okay,
all right.
So can I, the thing that I thought was going to happen that definitely didn't happen, which definitely should have happened because it would have made the film more interesting.
Orange is the New Red?
What?
Orange is the New Red.
Oh my god. Santa has four wives now. Big Red Love.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so when Mrs. Claus goes to the Reynolds household and the dad basically offers to let her be the nanny, I really thought the film was going to take a turn where he was going to start trying to seduce Mrs. Claus and she was going to leave Santa Claus for him.
Hey, man. Mrs. Claus is not an unattractive actress.
I mean,
she's already
an older woman, and but you know what? Dad's already had his two kids, so I don't think he cares too much about
that. Yeah, I mean, just say an older Cheryl Ladd is still a Cheryl Ladd, so.
This is true. This is entirely true. And it would have made for a much more interesting wrinkle in the story, because as we've established, this is a prequel to Santa Buddies, so it would have been great for the timeline to skew. And all of a sudden, once we return to the main Santa Buddies timeline, Mrs. Claus is conspicuously absent.
Yeah.
Or she's played by a different actress because, well, Santa had to remarry following the events of Santa Paws 2.
So, but this is a children's
Why don't they let
movie,
us write
so obviously,
this
honestly,
is a children's film, and that would never happen.
That would have never happened. That's very much Santa's workshop, and it's a good twist. It would be a good wrinkle.
That would be the Hallmark Channel story of...
Yes.
The Hallmark Channel plot of this film.
Yes.
All
right. So that's basically, what, Santa Paws 2, the Santa Pups? Yeah.
Santa Buddies 3, Santa Paws 2, the Santa Pups.
So this is on Netflix if for some reason you want to watch this.
Yeah, all the Santa Buddies films are on Netflix for your viewing pleasure, if you ever so desire.
Although, when I did it, Netflix did kick in and do autocorrect, and it said, it's February 2nd. Did you mean the Ted Bundy tapes?
Oh my god.
No, it didn't do that, but...
Are you sure you didn't want to watch the Velvet Buzzsaw, Brad?
I mean, I've been watching Ted Bundy tapes...
Can we just do a quick PSA about the Ted Bundy tapes?
Yeah, what's that?
I just want to say, hey guys, the lesson for the Ted Bundy tapes is not, wow, this guy was really attractive because he wasn't, and really personable, and he wasn't, and someone managed to be a killer. The lesson is, this guy was so full of himself that the only reason he got off was because of his pure narcissism. If he had been a little more humble, he would have got off scot-free out of everything.
Oh, no, absolutely. The lesson to be taken away from the Ted Bundy tapes is, like, nobody could stand this dude because he was a piece of shit and super narcissistic and the worst.
Because he was slightly over the baseline of attractive, people gave him the benefit of the doubt for so fucking long. Because that's just how the world treats dudes, especially how the world treated dudes back then, even more so than now.
Yeah. Can I also mention that the Nixon Library recently disavowed Roger Stone, but has not yet to disavow Ted Bundy, even though they were both super Nixon fans? Take that.
All I'm hearing is that it makes perfect sense that Zac Efron got cast as Ted Bundy.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Oh, I want to see that too. It's probably going to paint the dude as even more insufferable than he was. I'm sure he was even more insufferable, but even more insufferable than he was painted in the Ted Bundy tapes. Of course, they painted him as insufferable because he was a piece of shit and whatever. He's the worst. Anyways.
I love that the Santa Buddies episode was the one where we had to have our digression about Ted Bundy.
Real talk about Ted Bundy, kids. I mean, they're both.
I already
Netflix.
Brought up the Son
it's
of Sam
kind of
earlier,
new,
so whatever.
It's the new hotness on. Yeah, that's true. If we didn't evoke Son of Sam, we'd evoke Ted Bundy. It's the new hotness on Netflix. We had to address it.
I guess.
Anyways,
my last question about this film.
Yes.
Like I'm still puzzling over the timeline, and I my instinct tells me that they really just chucked the first two films and said, you know what, let's start over. Because we're really just building up the whole timeline thing in our heads. But I kind of feel like they just said, let's just get some new dogs and kids won't know the difference. Because honestly, kids probably didn't know the difference.
So it's similar to Pokemon, where there's such a turnover where they just target children within a certain age range. They don't care that there's like old ones. It's, you know... I assume that most children that watch Santa Paws 2, the Santa Pups, have not seen the other films. And they're not going to, because nobody cares about the continuity of these films. They're a money-making enterprise, because that's the world we live in.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix has kind of ruined it, but when this movie came out, this was kind of the era of your big goal is basically just to get grandma to buy this on a DVD to have something for when the kids come over at Christmas.
Basically,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now
that they all sit together on a Netflix queue, you can just watch one after the other, where you might not have sat and had a child watch all three Santa Pups movies in the same day. Mm-hmm. Now, people like idiots like us are more inclined to just watch these and notice these things. But back then, yeah, even just 7 years ago, that probably wasn't going to happen.
Hey, can I propose this? If we ever do bonus content, it's got to be a live thing of the Gauntlet.
1, 2, and 3? Oh, Lord.
It's going to be us watching every Santa Buddies film back to back. In order. Live.
I would rather we just recorded ourselves playing Gauntlet.
No, that's too pleasurable compared to this. We must do this for the listeners.
If this is something that we had to do, I would almost say let's just rent the rights to the film, rent out a venue space, and invite people to come watch us watch these three back to back to back. Because I would rather have it as a complete, total live experience than just streaming it on the internet.
It like, can't be if, that expensive,
if,
right?
If we are going to do this thing, I want as many people as possible to have to experience it with us in person.
We're going to do this right.
I would say the only problem with that idea is just that the D word is attached to this movie.
That is true. So it's going to be expensive.
That just makes the price go up because of that word.
What we're saying is subscribe to our Patreon now.
Upon a star. We could do it
underground.
Brad,
no, you're costing us like thousands of dollars per second.
Nobody
Please
has
subscribe
to know.
To our Patreon that doesn't exist that I can buy Resident Evil 2 and not feel bad about it.
Yeah, just PayPal me some money, really. I'll make sure John gets it in due time. So yeah, that's Santa Paws 2. That's really all you need to know.
Crankometer.
Is that it's literally the Christmas Chronicles, but worse. So let's
we
move on
do
to
the crankometer. Yes, that.
Now is the time in our show where we discuss how to rate these films on an X and Y axis, because that's just the kind of people we are. The X axis on the crankometer is how Christmassy a film is versus the Y axis, which is how good a film is. So, gentlemen, how Christmassy is Santa Paws 2, The Santa Pups?
It's pretty darn Christmassy. It's all about Christmas spirit and stuff. Like, let's do a little thought exercise. Okay. Assume that Christmas doesn't exist, or Santa doesn't exist, heaven forbid, and the Christmas spirit is not some sort of Christmas magic. What plot is there? There's not any.
This is about Christmas. Two kids have to deal with the death of their mom, and
one is
trying to soldier on and observe the Christmas spirit in a more, I guess, religious sense, because she does sing a couple of hymns in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say this movie does every once in a while invoke the other J-Man who's not me.
Right.
Yeah.
To a similar intensity that Puppy Paws did, for that matter.
Yes.
Where the girl starts out, oh, my parents are with Jesus now. It's that level of Christmassiness. Like, she does a blessing at dinner. She sings Oh Holy Night. Back one step real quick. That Blue Christmas song she sang, that was like her mom's favorite song, where the song was basically about having a dead mom at Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did that mom predict her own death via song?
I guess.
I believe she did.
Yeah, because she's like, this is my mom's favorite song, and it's just the most depressing song imaginable.
Yeah, and it's definitely not the Elvis Presley and Blue Christmas, because this was written and produced by the composer of the film. It's a completely new Blue Christmas.
Because they couldn't pay for the rights for the Elvis song.
Probably. So it is Christmassy. I'm going to give it that. I'm going to say that it's a 3, because it doesn't misuse it, but then it doesn't necessarily do a whole lot with what's there.
It just is.
Yeah.
It's about Christmas, but it's not about Christmas, and it's not about Christmas.
Yeah, right.
Which would be a negative one. You know what I'm trying to say?
No, I get you. It's in the positive, but it's definitely not superlative.
It is about Christmas in the way that toast is food.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it is, but
I get you. Yeah, so I'm willing to give it a 3.
So you're saying, Brad, you would enjoy this movie a lot more if I put avocado on it?
I would like this movie a lot more with avocado, being a classic uninformed millennial.
You would, Brad.
We're going to drive that shit into the ground, and I love it.
I know. Only one person would appreciate it, and he doesn't even listen to the show anymore.
Anywho, all right.
So on the y-axis, how good is Puppy Paws 2? Santa Paws 2. Santa Pups 2. Shit.
Okay, if I'm going to have a dog fart movie, I want some dog farts in my dog fart movie.
It's way bad.
Sorry.
No.
Here's my thing. We gave The Christmas Chronicles a 4-2. I want to give this film the same score, minus 1.
Really? Just minus 1?
No.
This is way worse than a one. First off, at the start,
I was very intrigued by this movie because I went to Wikipedia and read the reception section, and it said this movie was criticized for being unusually dark, and I was just like, okay, a movie that people are saying, like, this movie didn't need to be so, like, depressing, and it's a talking dog movie, I was like, sign me up, I gotta know what's going on.
A talking dog dead mom movie.
And were you disappointed?
Not for that reason. This movie was unnecessarily dark, indeed. Like, it was like these people all throwing their dogs in the... Because here's the thing. Morning after, people are going to have to be like, yeah, I need to go get my dog back from the pound now, because I kind of told the pound guy to kill my dog. And I'm hoping he's kind of changed his mind as well about this, because he said he was going to kill it last night.
Yeah.
I can't say that this is necessarily that much darker, because remember in the last film where featured a Santa Claus sitting on a street corner, literally having forgotten who he was.
Oh, right. That was
like one of the saddest Santa Claus things I've ever seen. And then here, so, it's just Mrs. Claus is in jail for no reason, basically.
So here's the if you were a child, here's the maybe the scariest thing is like the weird viral. Like, whenever somebody gets the Christmas cold and passes it on to somebody else, they, like, spew out, like, this black Harry Potter magic cloud that, like, passes to the other person. That might be kind of scary if you're a little kid.
I know, yeah. It's like being a humbug is, like, visualized and turned into an actual disease.
As somebody who read the Hot Zone, the back cover of the Hot Zone at age 6, and then was terrified of the Ebola virus and literally anything that existed before 1993, I could see how this would be a little bit scary and a little bit dark.
Okay, I want to go with -3.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that, too. It's bad. It's real bad.
It's bad in premise. It's bad in quality.
Like, and it's not so bad, it's good.
You know, there are several songs fronted by dogs with CGI moving mouths.
The moving mouths were a little less bad than in the previous entries, but it's still bad.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to agree on a -3.
Okay.
And here's why. Here's why.
Okay.
I didn't hate this as much as the other two, as shocking as that is to admit.
Wow.
There were things about it that I legitimately enjoyed. A couple of the musical numbers were fine, like the mayor leading the town in a parade down the street for no reason, and the Bright Sisters singing their song about how they got put in jail. And then certain events would just happen in this film that made me literally scream out, "What the fuck?"
Okay.
Like the inciting incident where the kid says, "I wish Christmas spirit were dead," and Santa Paws goes, "I will grant that wish."
Seems reasonable.
Like just those handful of moments that made me enjoy this more than the other two. So you know what? If we gave Santa Paws the first a -5 on the y-axis, I will give this a -3 on the y-axis.
Here's my mathematical solution: -1 for every dog. Santa Pup, plus +1 for the Bright Sisters singing that musical number in jail, which was actually a delight. And if you can find just that number on YouTube, I would actually kind of recommend watching that if you got like 3 minutes to spare.
Yeah.
It is a very like jaunty song with very like actually comedic acting behind it in the flashbacks.
It's really weird too, because like the jail warden like goes into like a weird spell and like starts dancing even though he has the Christmas cold. It's friggin' weird.
Right, it's like they're breaking him out of it, but then and then some, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely find it on the tube and watch it if you can.
I think that's fair. And a 3-3 is where we're gonna put Santa Paws 2, the Santa Pups. So this is kind of our third annual Santa Buddies jaunt, and believe it or not, we do have one more ready to go. because Puppy Star Christmas came out just this past November, and it features a number of characters from the Santa Buddies series that will reappear.
I hope Eddie the Elf Dog is in it.
Namely, if we just to go ahead and give it away, basically.
No!
Okay, I won't.
No, give it away. I don't care.
Tiny the Dog makes her reappearance. Santa Claus, played by Richard Rale, is back. And also, the linchpin, I feel, of the entire series, Danny Woodburn is back as Eli. I can't wait for that.
No, Eddie.
I don't see Eddie on the cast list.
I refuse to participate in this upcoming episode.
Well, we've got a whole year to convince you.
I know. I'm kidding. Does
Puppy Star Christmas have a robotic dog in it? There's a person credited as being a character named PUP, like P.U.P. Is there a singing robot dog?
That would be an absolute Christmas miracle.
The man from PUPPY.
So what is your favorite tortured acronym like that? I think mine might be from Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden, how the evil organization is called Blood Moses, where each letter stands for something.
It's very good. I can't think of one right now, but I laugh at any acronym like that.
Honestly, I think my favorite might be in the Too Many Cooks short where they go into like a space opera.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
And
it was like Beast Rebels of the Hellscape or something.
Beast
like
Rebels
that.
Of the Hellscape, yes. We need more needless acronyms in our lives, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Christmas Creeps. Final thoughts before we wrap this episode, guys? Anything.
Happy Puppy Bowl.
Happy Puppy Bowl, everybody.
All these dogs, not a single fart. What a waste.
Yeah, that's a shame. That really is a shame. Like, I was at least hoping for one.
Every animal was hurt in the making of this film.
Karmically, if not physically.
Yes.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so that's Christmas Creeps for this week. So if you have any questions or comments or recommendations for future episodes, we're still taking recommendations, even though, you know, we've got a bunch. We're gonna do those this year. You can hit us up at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Go to Twitter. We are at Christmas Creeps on Twitter. Facebook.com/Christmas Creeps. We're on iTunes. We're on YouTube. We are on Stitcher and Google Play and all that fun stuff. We're apparently, I'm trying to get us on Spotify, but no promises there. I guess, yeah, for Christmas Creeps, I'm Joseph Wade.
I'm Johnny Five the Hero Robot, and I'm looking at IMDb right now for Puppy Star Christmas. And you know how IMDb has user lists?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the user lists for Puppy Star Christmas, there's one called Nope, one called Worldwide Movie Release Calendar, one called Films I Own, and one called Movies in all caps.
It's Jason Mendoza's movie
IMDb
list.
Really went downhill when they started letting 12-year-olds use it.
I'm Bradford.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Ba 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 ba. Happy Christmas.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jess. And we're Hallmark and Jess. I feel like we're in a car dealership commercial.
We swear we won't talk like this during the podcast.
There's two things we love most in this world.
Hallmark movies and Lacey Chabert.
And we're breaking down all of your favorite Hallmark movies like...
A Very Merry Mix-Up.
Rocky Mountain Christmas.
And the All of My Heart series.
Tommy, please be my husband.
So tune in every Wednesday. Today!